How to book a meeting with anyone. Welcome back to a fresh episode of BreakingB2B.com. I'm your host, Sam Dunning. And if you want to join thousands of legends enjoying my daily newsletter, checking out past podcast episodes, or if you want to apply to work with us, head over to BreakingB2B.com. So today, Dale Dupree returns to the show after 4 years. We're going to be diving into how you can book a meeting with anyone, if it's really possible, the problems with most B2B outreach today. We're going to be sharing some top tips when it comes to setting those meetings and some unusual ideas that you might not be that familiar with. We've got to give a huge shout out to Factors.ai. In B2B, there's a few harsh truths. At best, only 4% of your website visitors convert into sales calls, and less than 1% of the outbound account list ends up making a purchase. By the time people request a demo or call, they're already late in their stages of evaluation. Smart B2B companies don't wait for people to magically buy. Instead, they expand their sales pipeline by tapping into intent signals. Factors.ai identifies prospects showing buying intent on your website, LinkedIn, and G2. Prospect into high intent accounts at the moment they're buying. Make it easy for your team to generate revenue and get more from every dollar spent. The best part, you can attribute and track everything seamlessly through the Factors.ai platform. Don't miss out, grab a free trial today and start maximizing your revenue over at Factors.ai. So with that, without further ado, Dale, welcome back to the show, sir. How are we?
Yo, I'm doing good. It's like a little mini reunion for me and you. It's been a hot minute.
Yeah, man. So when we were just saying before we hit record, you just started the Sales Rebellion 4 years ago when you were first on the show, as did we just start this podcast. So it's, yeah, nice to have you back, man. Good to be chatting and excited to dive in. So first and foremost, is it actually possible? I mean, I've only got to look at some of your LinkedIn posts, and you and your crew are setting meetings with all kinds of execs, all kinds of different B2B businesses, be them small or huge. Is it actually possible to set a meeting with anyone you want?
Yeah, absolutely. Why not?
Yeah, I like that's bold talk. So we're going to dig into that. So before we do, before we share some of your secrets, some of your lesser known, unusual, new ideas to break through, because I know you've got a lot of opinions when it comes to setting meetings, what do you believe are the problems or main problem when it comes to B2B outreach and traditional methods of getting appointments and meetings today?
It's a loaded question, right? Like here's how I would break it down. I think that what we call inside of the rebellion as the sins, spotlight as the sins of the fathers of sales leaders before us. I think the problem is that we perpetuate those things, that a lot of the particular ways that we treat a prospect, a lot of the ways that we treat ourselves as sales reps, a lot of the ways that we treat our process as a sales rep comes from this place of ultimately trying to get something for us. And when I say us, I mean the leaders that beat it into our head that we had to be doing these things in the first place for them. So really it's like an extension of us ultimately, and it's for somebody else entirely. So it's weird, right? Because people will label a sales rep as selfish, but really the selfishness stems from pressure and somebody telling them to do things that, again, really only help the leader or the organization, don't help the sales rep. Will the sales rep make a lot of money for selling a lot of stuff, you know, based on lies or manipulation or any of these little tricks or playbooks that the leader has given the rep? And by the way, I want to caveat that with, I know that not every leader teaches this stuff, okay? It's just the majority of salespeople. That's the facts. Will they make a lot of money by doing these things? Yeah, dude. And will that like change their life? For sure, for the next couple of years. But it won't sustain a lifestyle. It will create a very poor reputation. And ultimately, you'll just become a transactional sales rep. So like, what's there to remember about you other than you sold me this widget or this service, right? Other than that, you're nothing.
Can you give us an example of what you mean? So you're talking about leadership basically pushing sales reps or marketers to book meetings no matter the cost.
Yeah.
Can you give us an example of what that might look like?
Yeah, so people have this this narrative around business is that all that matters is revenue to run your organization, right? And while that is the truth, we to me, that's a cop-out to just say like, well, businesses is based on revenue. Well, like you don't have revenue without a buyer, and a buyer is a person. You don't have revenue without a salesman or woman, and a salesman or woman is a person. So everything really ultimately revolves back around us. So like your idea came from a human, and if it helps a market, a segment of society, it's ultimately still helping people. But we base everything on revenue. That's it. And then we base that revenue number on the comfort that we desire as the people at the top. Now, I'm not somebody that's sitting here speaking from the bottom either. I have made the money, y'all. I've done awesome things. I've owned the $1 million home. I've lived the life. And the thing is that it's a lie. Everything that money promises you is a lie unless ultimately you're okay with yourself. And ultimately you are true to principles. And ultimately you are pursuing a narrative that builds a legacy. Otherwise, you're just going to find yourself in at a dead end street all alone with a ton of money. and it might sound cool to some people, but again, from somebody that's come from that side of things, there's not much there. It's a very lonely place. So, you know, we're perpetuating again this idea of like, well, I have all this money and I want to keep it and I don't want to do the work anymore. So I'm going to tell this sales rep to hit this number, do these metrics, tell the prospect whatever they need to hear in order to close the sale. And that's a perpetuated cycle of the past.
Mm. So is the reason that so much outreach is spammy, whether it's cold emails, terrible cold calls, LinkedIn messages, whatever, is that all leadership's fault, or does any of it come down to the marketing team or the sales team when it comes to B2B businesses?
It's a great question. I think it's all of our fault because like if I say, sure, I'll send that email, then like that's my problem. So if I don't try to innovate that email, if I don't rebel against what's being told to me and I clearly know that it's wrong, then that's my fault. And look, like anybody out there that might be thinking, well, like how does a sales rep know that it's wrong if they don't really know it from Adam? Well, look, like morality is a thing. And ultimately, the way we treat people, there's a standard. So if I, as an example, if I look at this email, if I read this email, and I'm like, okay, I'm supposed to send that. And there's not one bone in my body that goes, well, that sucks. Then I've been raised to a bad standard as a human to think that somehow this, you know, completely disconnected crap email about your product, your service, and how important it is that the prospect gives you time on their own calendar to let you sell them something, that somehow that is good, then we're very deceived as people on this earth. Again, like I think in most cases, like you can literally just get a gut check and be like, would I open this? Would I respond to this? Would I set an appointment with this? Probably not. So, you know, it falls on us as well too, to an extent as the sellers. And I've been a VP, right? So I've been on both sides, but no, I think it is ultimately it's about accountability. And ultimately it's about self-preservation. Like, do I want to just do what somebody else is telling me because they said so? Or do I want to build something sustainable that lasts and that I can get behind?
Yeah. 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 Getting quite philosophical. I can't even say the word here, but I like it. So Dale, give us an example for anyone that's, because we're going to have seasoned marketers, seasoned sellers tuning in, as well as perhaps folks that are new to the game. Give us an example of what is terrible outreach. You touched on it a bit there with mentioning your product and your service and nothing more. Whether it is, perhaps you want to give us an example of what a terrible cold call might sound like, or what a terrible email might roughly sound like, just so folks know what isn't working today.
Right. I want to just kind of put this in everybody's head as well too, that I don't believe that the effort of sales outreach to any capacity is ultimately terrible. I'd say bad or not the right effort, but I can't say terrible for one reason. it's really hard to do sales. So making the commitment to get into sales, making the commitment to craft an email message, to pick up the phone and dial somebody, to knock on a door and introduce yourself to a stranger, man, that takes a lot of guts. It ultimately does. The most extroverted person, you know, would agree to that statement, right? That like, yeah, there's definitely like a place that I can find myself in where I don't want to do that, or that it's really a difficult thing, even for the person that finds it to be the easiest. So terrible, I just can't use that word, but bad. Somebody picking up the phone and calling me and using all the just weird tricks, right? Saying things like, oh, hey, Dale, it's Mark over at ABC Company. I have no idea who Mark is or what ABC Company is. Like, hey, do I know you? It's kind of the first thing that goes through my head. You know, I hate it when people say things like, hey, I'm going to use a company name here. This is probably a sin, but I don't care because this is one of their tactics. Hey, I'm so-and-so with Zoom Info. I actually called you about 9 months ago, and you told me to call you back around this time. That's a real line that I've been fed times, and buyers have been fed many times by groups like that. You know, does it stem from them? I don't know. But ultimately, there's a trainer out there teaching this kind of stuff, right? So same with emails. Emails to me, like, you know, I got 1,000 of them in my inbox from this week. Just let alone, probably more than that at this point. It's 10:15 in the morning. I haven't checked in a couple hours, right? So that's between my spam folder, my inbox, right? Which is crazy thought. There's probably 60% of that is spam. So I still got, you know, a solid 400 emails this week. And you know, I'm a founder, right? So people are emailing me. I've opened from people that I don't know, maybe 2 total. And one of them was because it felt very deceiving. And I was like, oh, come on, after I got into it. And the second one, it was because I thought it was somebody else, right? But, you know, one of the things that I do too, just to like put it out there, I know this is going to sound crazy, but I try to get through all 400 of the emails and just simply respond like in a very polite way. Like, hey, your emails suck, but keep pressing on, maybe change some things in it. Here's a free resource for you. Like, I try to get back to every email, but that's me, dude. Think about there's nobody doing that. So like, here are 400 emails that go completely unread because they focus too much on a product, too much on a service. It's too noisy in an inbox these days. So it's hard to even tell you what a bad email is because I'm not even opening them anymore. If I'm the CEO or the CFO, I get too many.
Got it. No, I appreciate you sharing some examples. So it sounds like it's using cheap tactics and being selfish as well in the outreach. So also focusing on how great you are, how great your offer is, how cool your company is, and maybe making up stuff that you spoke 9 months, 10 months ago, whatever. So that's what we want to avoid. So let's start sharing with the audience some good stuff, Dale. I know you're full of it. You've got to follow Dale on LinkedIn. He's always sharing unusual ways to reach out, which we're going to dive into now. So we've talked about the problems, but let's break it down. I want to go through your strategy, Dale, from almost initial research and conception right through to delivery and execution and landing that meeting. So you've done all sorts, cold mail, physical mail, all kinds of different stuff. What is, when it comes to setting up a campaign, what is like step 0 before you even get to step 1? What is the first thing that you do when you're looking, when you've perhaps laid out a set of dream accounts that you'd love to break into and love to do business with? What is like the first thing that you folks lay down?
Great question. Good caveat from your last question, right? Because where we start is we start in the stereotypes. So we start with like, what is bad currently? And when we say bad, well, there's a couple things. The first place that we start is in the conceptualization of just getting attention. So how are people trying to get attention right now of this person, most likely, whether it's people in the office that they know, whether it's a stranger trying to sell them something. We look at all aspects of attention, essentially. Now, what's interesting about this methodology is that I don't know that there's a lot of people that do it. No one ever taught me this. It's just something I created on my own years, decade plus ago with my company that I was with as an individual contributor. And I've taught to people all over the world ever since. I'm sure it's not an original idea, though. I just want to take that off the plate, too. Like, I'm not
that much cool, is right.
But the idea is like, what are the stressors, right? And ultimately, like, why would somebody not pay attention to me? by taking the negatives, right, and talking about the things that people don't want to deal with on a daily basis. And obviously, when it comes to like a cold call or cold outreach, when I am analyzing what bothers this person or what is too generic to this person or what ultimately doesn't speak to this person around the narrative that they desire, then it helps me to understand like, well, why would I do it that way? Why would I try it through that medium? And now the other side of this is that I don't want anybody to hear that we don't believe in like picking the phone up just because people don't pick up the phone. Cause if you pick it up enough and you dial enough, I promise you the person will absolutely pick up the phone. We use the phone as more of a follow-up methodology. And again, like I'll get to that here in a second, but this is when we start at this base concept. We don't think phone, email, direct mail. We don't think like that. We think like, what does this person not want to hear about? And second, like, what are the negatives, right? And secondly, like, what does it look like in their inbox currently? What does it sound like when a salesperson calls them right now? What is the kind of typical interaction that they have so that we can stand out from that?
And is that understanding what they wouldn't pay attention to, is that what we've just outlined previously, or is there usually a bunch of other stuff that you typically see too?
Yeah, that's why I was saying, like, great question, because we've kind of gone over some of this stuff. So here, think like this. The majority of salespeople out there are picking up the phone and saying, hey, can I have 27 seconds to tell you why I called? Okay, so if I get 90 calls a month that I hear that, to some extent, right, because you could also be hearing on the other line the person saying, hey, is this Dale? This has been over XYZ company. You can hear the person saying, hey, Dale, did you have a minute for me? I'm a stranger. Did you have a minute for me real quick? Like, there's a lot of different ways that you'll hear, hey, can I have some of your time to tell you why I'm pitching, what I'm pitching today is the thought process. So what you deduce in all that is that people don't like to be sold to. They prefer to buy. People don't want to, they're not sitting around waiting for your pitch. Like, oh gosh, a salesperson. Oh, thank God. Let me just hold on. Important stuff in my day. Let me just talk to this salesperson real quick. That sounds glorious. Like it's not happening, but to be very, 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 transparent about that with ourselves and honest in a blunt way, right? That again, it doesn't mean that somebody's not going to talk to you. It's just this conceptualization of like, what's negative to them? Like, what do they look at as unfavorable or something that they want nothing to do with? So if I start in that place, it might feel like, well, how the hell do I call somebody at all? It's kind of maybe what's coming to some people's minds that are listening to this, but that's the point. If you take yourself to a place that almost feels like a dead end, if you're a scrappy person, if you're a creative, if you have aspirations to grow and be bigger and better and do it, you know, on a scale that no one's ever done it before, then this is what challenges you to develop and become what it is that ultimately the Sales Rebellion believes you can be.
Got it. So we're making essentially a list of why these dream prospects, our target accounts, wouldn't pay any attention to us. That's the first step. Got that together. What's next?
When I'm making that list, some of the things that will come to mind are stereotypes, typical stereotypes inside the organization. So if I sell a product that is workflow related, as an example, I can pick out negative things in the workflow that they don't like. So with a copy machine, always the easiest because I sold copiers for so long, I can come back to things that would be like the biggest issue they deal with, double billing, frequent service calls, the toner's out, there was no error message on it, now we're down, they can't get us a toner for several days. These are also things that people don't like or that are negative and ultimately that they deal with during their daily, weekly, monthly grind that ultimately we can help, but we're not thinking like that right now. What we're thinking about again is what are the problems? So now we understand it from the outside looking in when it comes to like getting attention and even like talking to somebody in the first place. And then we understand it like why that is ultimately, because when we look internally and we see like, what are the problems that they're dealing with? They don't have time to talk to us because they're putting out fires and they're having to deal with all these issues on top of everything else that they do in their business. So, but the negative stereotypes is where we head. So we build those negative stereotypes out. And I'm just going to give a quick example. This is what we call a coffee stained letter. It literally looks like a coaster. So when it's nice and folded up, it's just a little coffee coaster for you. And we kind of tell the prospect that in this, but I'm going to just read, like, before I really get into anything else, I just want you to hear what we deduce as the stereotypes when it comes to the problems that people typically deal with in sales. So, and then we bullet point them for people to experience. Your net new business has seen a sharper decline than Congress's approval rating. That's for all my American friends. Your reply rate on prospecting activities has a theme song, quote, "The Sound of Silence." Hitting target every month is like playing that horrible claw game at the arcade. The prize is right within your grasp, but you're often left disappointed. Your biggest points of differentiation are the front and color of your logo. Sorry, font. Excuse me. I did that one just for you, dog. the idea is that we're trying to create these familiar moments for people around the stereo. That's the outcome of the second line of thought, right? And just to get into it, the first line of thought real quick, like, all right, so we think of all these negative things that salespeople do. Like, what the hell do we do? Well, this is a trash can. So we just talked about like how cold calls suck, right? It's kind of what we deduced. So imagine that this shows up in the mail at your office, and inside of it is a piece of trash, like literally a crumpled up letter is what we call it. And you get this thing, and you're, what the hell is this? And you open it up and you read the first part of it. And it says, studies show that 99% of all sales mumbo jumbo is crap. So here we go. Come on, 0.03%. I pre-crumbled this. Go ahead, please.
If you're listening in, Dale has just opened what's like a blue mini plastic trash can. He's opened that up, taken off the lid, and he's uncrumpled a letter, which is, I believe, what he's read out or something similar.
Correct. Yeah. Sorry for not narrating better. I'll keep that in mind. Cool, so man. Then the prospect comes to this, the statement, I've pre-crumpled this letter for you to hang on your wall of shame and make it easier for you to throw away. And then it asks, you know, for some time basically to read the rest of the letter, and it creates those familiar moments for people around the negative stereotype. So we interrupt the typical patterns this way, which is, you know, a buzzword these days inside of the sales world. But interrupting a typical pattern by sending somebody a 4x6 postcard that says cold call bingo at the top, your prospect's going to read that. And when they read the little note that comes with it that says, hey, if I say anything, when I cold call you, if I say anything on this list and it gives you a bingo, you can hang up on me immediately. And then here are some of the things that are on here. Outside the box, low hanging fruit. Not my first rodeo. quick wins, put the feelers out. Anyway, you get it. It's just a really fun way to interact with people and give them a better experience. Because ultimately what we're deducing here is that whether it's the cold call itself, the cold email itself, the outreach in particular, whether it's the negative stereotypes inside of their organization that they deal with the product or service, with their workflows, all of it creates a bad experience. And so we believe in this ultimate identity of experiential outreach. So if I give somebody something to touch and hold, if they get a trash can that they put in their hands with a lid they have to pop off with a piece of garbage inside of it that they feel, and they're like, this is trash, clearly, that then ignites the senses. It creates an experience, touch, feel, smell. The emotions turn on as well, too. We're not just dealing with the B2B, quote unquote, buyer anymore. Now what's happening is we are connecting with somebody, with the person on the other side. So earlier I went on a tangent about revenue and how people don't matter. Yes, they do. And the most important thing about that perspective that we have to remember is that without people, you sell nothing. Without people, no one buys your stuff. So the more that we can create something that is a little risque, if you will, to an extent, or just a little risky even to an extent, because it's not in the box of business, the more we can lean into that risk and lean into that discomfort, the more we'll speak to the human on the other side, who from 8 to 5 does the same monotonous shit over and over again every single day. Instead of having to live in the monotony, they get a break, and you provided it. Even if they don't laugh, like even if they're like, well, that was kind of corny, they will literally know who you are from that moment forward, because you'll be the first person that ever gave them a good experience like it.
Nice. Let's break that down. So Dale, in short, we're basically saying you're a marketer because you're doing so many strategies that marketers would use, but in a sales outreach format. So what you mentioned earlier was when it came to, so for your example, you've got history in copier sales, which is great from a B2B perspective, high ticket item, I imagine,
quite a long sales cycle, quite a long, probably multiple people involved in the decision. So it's a great example. And you said you started with their frustrations, their daily problems, their daily issues. What is pissing them off on a daily basis? How can we leverage that to our advantage? And then you layered that basically with humor and then poking fun with what sales folks do to them at the moment. So if we start with the first part of that, kind of their daily frustrations, their daily issues, their daily kind of problems, how did you work those out to then leverage in that outreach? Or how can people work those out?
Good question. And the thing that I would challenge people to think differently about is this idea of using those things as leverage for ourselves. So here is how I worked it out for me. Is I sat around and I thought, what are some things in my life I want to change? And I just got extremely deep and personal with the first time I ever did this exercise. What are habits that I don't like? What are inconsistencies that I have? And then what I realized is that if someone came to me and showed me that I could fix those things for myself, not for them and the glory of their product or their service or what they could do for me, but for myself, that if they could literally tap into a place in me that came to a realization for me that I said, I can be different, I can change, that I'll buy into that. I don't need you to sell me anything. I'll sell myself, right? So we believe that everybody is in sales inside of the Sales Rebellion. We believe that a broker sells a network, that a teacher sells knowledge, that a janitor sells a clean environment. And we believe that a buyer sells themselves. And so the more that you can think around everything that we've just laid out in this mindset of becoming a servant leader to others and ultimately letting them be the culprit, not you, like them literally being the reason that this is going to happen in the first place when it comes to the transaction and the change that will take place in their business, you'll win every single time. So when I looked at the copier and I knew everybody hated it, I never once made it about how I could do better because I'm just another copier guy. Why would you suddenly just randomly trust me that came out of nowhere that has this funny marketing? Instead, I have to build on the credibility and trust piece in the first place, which means I have to make it all about you. So I don't have one on me, but we have these little bricks. They're old school copier warrior bricks. I would hand these to the people in the office that used the copier, didn't even make the decisions on whether or not they would buy a new one, just used it. And I had this awesome little cartoon that showed them how to use it on the copy machine. And the whole entire concept of it was, it doesn't fix anything. It's kind of silly even, but like you'll feel a lot better by taking some frustration out and chucking this foam brick at your copy machine and just pretending in your mind that you're destroying it in the process. Because it's all about the emotional context we provide. So imagine that 40 people in an office then go to the decision maker and go, you know, we already hate this copier. You know that we want nothing to do with it. This guy has given us this buy-in for ourselves that it can be better. And we believe it for us. We believe it for our environment. You need to talk to him. Now everything changes. And we're not just evaluating Dale. We're not just evaluating my product and service. What we're evaluating is your change agent. Around the narrative that you seek to tell, the story you want to tell in the future.
So in your case, it's a nice example. Were you literally talking to these prospects and asking them kind of what are your day-to-day frustrations, or were they just sharing them with you when you were doing your previous sales outreach, or how did that come about?
Yeah, in the beginning, you have to figure it out for yourself. So a lot of it is conversational. But over the course of time, like business acumen is something that's so underrated inside of the business world. So we ask for a sales rep to have 4 years of sales experience. We don't even like apply that to the identity of like, what's their business acumen though? What do they know about business? You know, beyond just the fact that they're able to get on the phone and make a cold call, what do they know about business? This is something we don't talk about enough. I think business acumen for most people is one of the most powerful tools that you have ultimately. So I got so good that I could look at a manufacturing firm that made a plastic part. I could then say to myself, well, what's the plastic part for? And I could see it's in this type of satellite and this type of airplane and this type of car. And I could go, okay, cool. So they make this plastic part in their office for this particular prospect that they're selling to. What's the process? And I could break the whole process down. And then I could go, where does the copier fit into that? And then I could also say to myself, like, well, what are lead times like? Like, how long does it take to make the plastic part? And so if I make the plastic part in-house, does it take an hour? Does it take 10,000 hours? And then it goes to a customer, like, what is the customer's expectation of them? And then how does my paper flow, workflow, how does it make or break that process? And then I could literally figure out all these little details. And in most cases, I could come to a meeting and I could say, hey, so I did some research on your company. I see you do this, this, and this. And so I'm curious, do you ever have a problem with this in particular when it comes to your document workflow or your copiers, your printers, your just your general management around paper that causes any hiccups with that process? And boom, 90% of the time, people will be like, oh, that's it. Like, that's our biggest issue. So it's... it really is just this identity of like, do the math, guys and girls, like just like figure this thing out for yourself. Like, no one cares as much as you. So if you can go in and deeply think beyond your product, beyond your service, but about the people, what they've built and ultimately how you tie into it, you'll win all day long and you'll figure this stuff out for yourself, especially if you're willing to look stupid, as people say, by saying something like, hey, I'm going to ask a question right now that I don't even know is like anywhere near the right question to even ask you, but it feels good to me and it feels like it'll give me direction. So do you mind humoring me for a minute and giving me an answer? Like, there's risk in that, but there is great reward because you'll develop your business acumen beyond any kind of recognition.
Always good to ask the stupid questions, always. And like, that's why I'm running the show. I'm asking things that I want to learn, and hopefully the audience have enjoyed it after 4 years or so we've been running. Breaking B2B is sponsored by Revenue Hero. Did you ever fill in a website inquiry form only to wait hours or even days to hear back from a sales rep? Then comes the endless back and forth trying to schedule a time that works for everyone. It's painful, right? Leads slip through the cracks along with a ton of lost revenue. Revenue Hero fixes this painful process for B2B companies just like yours, allowing prospects to book a time on your sales team's calendar instantly from the website. Behind the scenes, marketing can even route qualified leads to the best sales rep for the job. Hundreds of businesses automate their request a demo or book a cool workflow with Revenue Hero, including app queues, Inflection, Ultimate AI, Customer IO, and User Evidence. B2B marketers can see increases in up to 80% of qualified meetings booked. See Revenue Hero in action for yourself today at revenuehero.io. That's revenuehero.io, and grab a free demo. Something you laid down there, it's something I've talked about all the time. Like, so many, it doesn't matter if you're a marketer, if you're a founder, if you're in sales, so many people do not know the problems that they're offering fixes. They just don't. And I'll ask them things like, okay, your product does this, it has this many features, it does all this, but what is the main issue? Why would someone one day wake up and think, this has gotten to the tipping point, I'm so annoyed, I'm so frustrated, it's costing me time, it's costing me money, it's costing me resource. What is that juicy problem that someone's so frustrated they decide that they're ready to have a conversation with you in this case? Or maybe they come inbound because they've seen one of your ads, they've looked you up on Google search, whatever. If you don't know that stuff as a seller or as a marketer, you're just miles behind, because not only can that inform your outreach like we're talking about now, because when you leverage problems, they resonate so much better than features or benefits, but it can help across multi-channel ads, outreach, content, LinkedIn posts, video, podcasts, whatever. So if you don't know those frustrations like Dell's laid out, start talking to your sales team if you're a marketer, or if you're a seller, speak to your peers. Perhaps you've got sales leadership that can help you with those, or start talking to your prospects, existing customers. They're not going to mind if you're open and say, look, can I ask you a silly question? I'd love for you to share me this. Can you help me understand? Like you say, people are going to help you if you ask for it. Cool. Let's move forward. The problems. So you started with the frustration. In that outreach, you then use some humor and you kind of poked fun at what other salespeople are typically doing. Should we always go down that approach, Dale? Should we always try and layer a bit of fun, a bit of humor in the process?
I really lean deeply and heavily into the concept of making people feel good. So a lot of people would label that as humor or jokes or being silly. It's just about making people feel good. The majority of people prefer it. And humor is a universal language. So I'm not talking about like some kind of inside joke or quoting a movie that maybe nobody has seen, even though in your mind, you're like, how the hell have you not seen that movie? It's about meeting people like in their stereotype, in their typical environment, and having a little fun with it in the process, because that makes them feel seen and it makes them feel heard and it makes them feel good. And again, like I just said, humor is a universal language if we use it right. It's literally just about this idea of making, they don't even have to laugh. They can just go, that's funny. And like even saying that out loud triggers something internally to make that person feel good. So we're not trying to become Dave Chappelle here. We are being light enough and airy enough in those first moments to help people to see that, hey, maybe I should take some time to get into the dreaded sales cycle that I'm not going to give to anybody calling me, asking me for 30 seconds and then reading me generic pain points.
Yeah. So it's ultimately about being different. It sounds like gaining attention, not doing stereotypical stuff. And I know you said you didn't like the word, but pattern interrupt in the physical male sense seems relevant. So we've talked through the process, Del. Do you think this process can work physical male, doing everything we've talked about? Can it work for any industry? Like you've shared with us a coffee stained letter, a letter that's screwed up in a little mini plastic trash can. Is this something, no matter whether we're in tech, software, selling to services or products or what elsewhere, is it something that's across the board in B2B that we can see success with?
Yeah, absolutely. So I held up a coffee coaster earlier. I showed you a trash can with a crumpled letter inside. There's a letter that we have that is shredded at the bottom, when we call it the pre-shredded letter. There's a letter specifically from your daughter or son. We call it the Ode to McKenna. It's got a picture of what mommy or daddy does on the back. This looks like a bank robbery if you're watching. If you're not, it's a very crude drawing of what looks like a bank robbery by a 7-year-old, young lady. So wait, like those letters, there's 7 total in the Rebel Letter Cadence. Those letters are a universal language. They are, hey, when it comes to sales and marketing, you really don't like talking to salespeople. And it's a hassle. It's frustrating. It's not something that you look forward to on a daily basis. But are you having any of these cool problems? And people can get behind that message a lot better than what they perceive is happening, because they're experiencing it. This is Disney for sales. We have students in the UK. We have students in Japan. We have students in Australia. We have students all across Asia. We have them in the islands down in South America. Of course, this works in America. You got to know it. We have students in Canada. It's, again, the experience is a universal language. Culturally, things are different for every sector of the world to an extent.
Sure.
But no matter what, when people experience something that's just a little bit different than what they're used to, and we layer that with what we call accommodation theory, which is a psychological theory, as a matter of fact, so it's backed by doctors, and we layer it with servant leadership, a level of servant leadership. We take the pitch away. We make it a little bit more fun. And what we would call, again, is inviting, welcoming, or making people feel good, right? So instead of leaning into the surface of what these things are, we go a little bit deeper. And by doing that, it speaks to many people. Well, we got all kinds of stuff. We've got, like, this is a resume, like with a cover letter on it and like a literal resume on the inside. So we have job seekers use this as well too, right? But if you're selling to benefits people, to HR people, this is a literal tool before the call to introduce them to you and to have a little fun and give them a really good experience. Like when I sold copiers, as an example, this resume would tell you that I was applying for the position of selling you or of being your copier provider or vendor. So, and it was absolutely, I'd say like 9 out of 10, it worked. We had these fun missing posters for people that just like aren't getting back to you or, quote unquote ghosting you. So you'd be using any range of the sales cycle, right? But like we tell people things like on here, it says like last seen in a Zoom meeting on Thursday, July 14th, or, not seen in the Zoom meeting at all that I sent him a calendar invite for that I didn't even ask him about. There's all kinds of fun ways to do this. We send people, we put their people's logos on wallets and we send them their wallet packed with their ID card So like they're like a literal like person is in here. We put pictures of like their dog.
Nice.
That we find on the internet inside of it. We put pictures of like them winning the Super Bowl with us, you know, inside of it. We put credit cards, we put money with their face on it. Like, this is all about getting in front of people in a way that is a little cheeky ultimately, but also just different than anybody else. And the thing is that some people go like, dude, why do you show all this stuff? Like, why do you show a book that you send to a prospect? Like, this is written by my prospect, the doctor, right? And it's, and it, we tell them on the inside of here, these pages are blank, right? We tell people, we say, hey, whenever you're ready to write this story, we've got the pen to get started, right? Reach out to us is the thought process. Like, all these things, people always are like, why do you show this to people? I'll tell you why. 0.001% of you watching right now will actually do this on your own. If you don't come hire us, you basically won't do it, is the thought process. This is not like, this is original to us, and we pride ourselves in our creativity, right? But people have been creative in the sales space for generations. It started in a creative space. Sales did, ultimately. We've gotten so far away from it, and all of you are afraid to be creative inside of your sales walk that I'm not worried about who sees it. Because ultimately, what I am worried about is giving people a better experience. What I am worried about is making the business world a better place. And no one cares, it seems. So that's our mission, right? That's what we're here to do. So I would challenge you, if you're watching this, like, call my bluff. DIY this stuff, right? We don't care. We don't care if you take our IP. We could literally care. I mean, I might sue you if you win Disney or something. Like, I might come after you. But for the most part, like, we don't care. What we want is to see a better environment. We want people to change the game, create a sense of wonder, to put people over products, community over commissions. We're building something much bigger than just the secrets inside of the Sales Rebellion. We desire a movement of sellers and marketers that will literally alter the face of the future of sales.
Nice. And we want to, I want to give the audience something practical. You've shared a bunch of examples that you use in your physical mail that you send out to prospects. Is there a framework for that? I don't know, where in your case, you're dealing with prospects that might need a new copier. But let's say, for example, someone was dealing, I don't know, they're selling CRM software solutions to marketing directors, as an example off the top of my head. Is there like a framework that you'd say, in that case, as long as you know their pain point, then you can send something that's relevant to that? Or is there like a process that you'd recommend folks follow?
Good question. So industries that we serve are financial advisors, all the way down to people that sell clothing, all the way to tech sales, SaaS, manufacturing, you know, automation, you know, tools. Like, we're in every industry, and I'll tell you right now that everybody sends a crumpled letter. Everybody uses the formula that we just talked about and sends a crumpled letter in the mail and makes a phone call behind it and says, hey, this is Dale. Did you get my crumpled up piece of paper that I sent in the mail? And it changes the outcomes for everybody. That, sure, it's not a silver bullet. You're still going to call 19 people and they're not going to pick up. Some of them are going to say, hey, I didn't even get your letter, but the 20th will, and it will change your outcomes so drastically. Your sales times, you know, in regards to your total sales cycle process, will go down drastically. You'll find opportunities faster. You will break the walls down of people thinking to themselves, I'm not in the market for this. They won't even think like that anymore, because they'll desire to build something with you. Even if it's like, well, I can't do it right now, but like, our software renewals is in 2 years. You want to keep in touch with me? You know, those are the types of things that we're seeking to essentially create. And that's the baseline thought, right? Is that if it, anybody and everybody in any situation can really put to practice is, well, how do I build something in the long term? And ultimately, how do I create such a different interruption to what's going on that they stop and they pay attention to what's happening?
Yeah, we covered the initial outreach. Is there much, you mentioned it then, you mentioned following up with a phone call, and then you might determine that they're happy to meet with you, or they might say, look, appreciate you sending that through, that was cool, catch up with me in 6 months, a year, whatever is relevant. Is that usually the flow down? Like, you send the lumpy physical mail that you've researched, then you'll give them a follow-up call. Is there usually something sent after, or what do you typically recommend?
Yeah, we believe heavily in email and phone and text and video and social and DMing people. We just believe in setting the precedence first. Like, creating a first touch, having people know who you are. So when they see the DM, they're like, oh, this is that dude that sent me that thing. Oh, this is that lady that sent me that stuff. Like, that's what creates better, more sophisticated outcomes for you as well, too. Think about this. Everybody think about this right now. Like, even the people that you have in your system that have met with you from just a raw cold call. And look, cold calling works. And so does cold emailing. It all works, y'all. It all works. This is about efficiency. And ultimately, this is about doing it different because you desire better outcomes for yourself. It doesn't mean that we don't use the standard mediums. Like, we love the phone. It dials a number. And on the other side, we say, hey, did you get the book I sent you? You know, it's much different than the way that most people do the cold calls. But let's say that you got somebody right now. They've been in your system. They've been in your process. You've done a discovery. You've presented your product. They're evaluating it. And all of a sudden, they're just not talking to you anymore, right? This is a very normal thing in sales. The physical mailing of things or dropping these things off in person as well, too. You can do either one. It's so highly effective that I got a message right here from this morning from a rep just to, like, give a little, like, you know, like, I'm reading. I swear to God, I'm reading a message from somebody. She says this. I wanted to let you know I tried the empty donut box. This is a thing that we do at the Rebellion when people won't get back to us. We send them an empty donut box and say, hey, sorry, I ate all the donuts because it's been like 2 weeks of them trying to get a hold of you and they were going stale. And then we put a little gift card for $10 and say, just in case you want to buy your own. Nice. Right. She says, I did it last week. I got a signed order immediately. I was waiting for 6 months for a signature for this person to sign. And I thought for sure they were going to tell me to kick rocks because they told me my competitor came in at $200 less per month. Right. But she said, so in the midst of her process and her problem and being ghosted, she sends this one thing that gives this person an experience and he signs up with her. So ultimately, like, there's some layers in there, right? Like, even though she was the most expensive, she had built the right value. This is, sellers say this all the time to us. They're like, what do I do to get people to just, like, pay attention to me and ultimately, like, what I'm trying to sell them being better than, like, racing to the bottom? Like, well, it's all right here in the experiences that we give people. So, like, a thought that I had here that I just want to throw out, and maybe it's not exactly what you were asking ultimately, but what I kind of felt like you were probably leading into was like, what's like a more basic way to kind of be a rebel in general for, you know, the standard person out there that wants to scale it or wants to put it into their process, but they got, you know, some timid sales reps or whatever else. Like, no, you can't do that. Like, you can't, like, you either go all in with this process and you decide to be different or you don't. It's really that simple. So companies that bring us on, they don't continue to make random cold calls and dial 1,000 people a day. They don't do that anymore. We get very highly, respectfully targeted on the people that we seek to serve. We break it down to what kind of experiences are we giving each one? How do we nuance that process? How do we do it in a timely manner to stay pleasantly persistent, if you will? And how do we convert it? Yeah. So there really is no, like, basic or standard way. Ultimately, it always comes down to what are you willing to risk? What part of our system, you know, like, for your own, from your own perspective and what might work best for you, is a good place to start? Is it letters? Is it sending people trophies in the mail of the football team that they love that just won a national championship? You know, like, what is it? Where's the place that we start? And then we execute on that at 100% and provide people with better outcomes. We got reps that are 1,000% of quota for the quarter. And it's February, right? Like, these are things that are happening in our system. And it's not a fluke. This is the way that that reps, the most elite reps, evolve into becoming the best.
Del, it's time to play devil's advocate.
Let's do it.
So we've gone through the benefits of your process, your unusual approach to physical mail and booking meetings, but we will have skeptics turning in skeptic rather, and they'll think, damn, this stuff sounds cool. This is unusual. I think I probably could book some meetings with it, but it sounds very labor intensive, very time intensive. I've got to do all this research. I've got to buy all this stuff. I've got to make these crumpled letters. I've got to buy these trophies, these wallets, these books, these vouchers, you name it, whatever outreach we decide. I could just make some cold calls, send some cold emails, run some ads, do another campaign. Like, I could just do that and probably book some meetings anyway.
Yeah, for sure. You should call, if you're in the UK, you should call my boy Benjamin too. He does a fantastic job of teaching people how to bang the phone, as they say. This is what I would tell you, is that if you feel that way, then don't come into the rebellion and don't differentiate yourself. It's kind of that simple. The side to that, like the pragmatic side, the part of me that just simply like rebuttals to that is to say, like, it doesn't matter if you don't want to do it or you don't have time. That's why we exist. We do it for you. We have a full fulfillment product that we offer. So if people don't have the ability to be able to be this creative, we do it for you, included in a giant box that shows up with all your stuff. And all you've got to do is pick your prospects. Hell, we send it right to your prospects if you wanted us to. So there is no excuse. Ultimately, it's really just that you don't want to spend the money or take the risk, if it, you know, is what I hear from that. But at the same time, I would say that this isn't for everybody. So just like, it's okay if this doesn't resonate with you, or you think, man, it's a little too risky, or it's not scalable. Like, you're not our people in that case. And we're not for you in that case either. Like, it just is not a good fit from that perspective. But what I will say is, if you're sick and tired of the same minutia, the same outcome, the same quote unquote predictable revenue model that continually fails you, causes you to fire people or not have the outcomes and the growth that you ultimately desire, this is what you have to do in order to get to that next level in the first place, which means that you have to risk, become uncomfortable, and do things that you probably won't like in the first place. But it's not about you. If it was about you, you would have already had a bunch of sales. Your cold calling efforts would have worked fantastically. And you wouldn't even be listening to this podcast to try and level up in the first place, right? You'd have all the answers. So it is about, to me, the other side of it is just that sometimes we're not the right fit for people that are listening, thinking that way in the first place. We need full commitment and buy-in to be a rebel.
Same with a lot of things though, right? Not everything is for everyone. But what I appreciate from our episode today is that a lot of what you've shared are fundamentals in both selling and marketing in the B2B space. So actually understand a lot of it really is foundational, like knowing who your target client is, knowing what pisses them off, what their day-to-day frustrations are, what those bleeding neck problems are, and why they're going to cause them issues in their business, in their revenue, in their workflows, whatever. Laying those down out clearly and succinctly in a way that captures their attention, be it direct mail in your case, but in someone else's, it could be a different form of outreach. Leveraging humor, leveraging something different, making them kind of sit upright and pay attention to the offer. Perhaps poking fun at what other folks do in your industry that you think, almost picking an enemy that I like to talk about in marketing, that I share quite a lot when it comes to website homepages, like basically sharing what you hate about your industry and how you don't do that shit. And then, follow through, really, like you say, sticking to the process and seeing it out, like anything. If you just do it one and done, it's never going to work. You've got to follow it through. So Dale, with that, appreciate you sharing your wisdom, sir. Please do tell us more about how everyone tuning in can learn from yourself, connect with you, and get in touch.
Hey, I appreciate you, man. Thank you for having me on the show. I'm really excited about you launching this podcast, getting deeper into the business space, and continuing to have an influence on people. It's very important. You are an extremely, extremely viable part of people's marketing growth and ultimately what they seek in their businesses for themselves to become better. So I appreciate the opportunity to be here, and I'm grateful for what you do, bro. If you want to find me, just Google me, Dale Dupree in the Googs. It works great. If you want to follow me, go to linkedin.com/IN/copywarrior or Dale the Rebel on most social platforms, from Instagram to TikTok to Twitter, Dale the Rebel, you'll find me, or just type in Dale Dupree, pretty much all those platforms as well too. We got a free Slack channel for Rebel sellers, Rebel marketers. Head to our website. There's a type form to fill out, the way that you can access us there, or just like send us a message, let us know. We'd love to see you in our community. Come learn, come have fun, come be a Rebel.
Awesome, man. We're going to chuck all of those links in the show notes and descriptions below. Once again, thanks very much for coming on, Dale. Really enjoyed the chat.
Much love, dude. Appreciate you.
Cheers, man. And as always, if you want to catch up on past episodes or join thousands of legends enjoying the daily newsletter, head over to breakingb2b.com. We've got to give a quick shout out to our show sponsors, Revenue Hero and Factors AI. And a big shout out for you for tuning in. We'll catch you on the next one for more no BS tips to grow your business through B2B marketing. Cheers for tuning in.